Hello, everybody. My name is Kenton DeYoung, and I'm sitting here with my co-host, Dylan Fredman.
Yeah.
This is another episode of Unsolved Game Mysteries.
Wow, I got a little carried away there, Kenton.
It's okay. We just recorded an amazing Patreon exclusive episode. So if you're not a Patreon subscriber, please check it out.
I was wearing this very shirt.
I was wearing this too.
Yes. So if you want to see me wear this shirt again, check it out.
It takes place in Calgary, Alberta.
We still have not been confirmed what's what. I feel like Calgary is proper because when I hear Calgary, it just sounds silly to me, but I could be wrong. It's whatever the locals want to call it.
Well, check out the episode. Let us know your thoughts. But we have a new episode tonight, a whole new story. This one takes place not in Calgary, but here in Saskatchewan.
Wow.
Hopping over a province.
That's cool.
Yeah. I thought I'd be bringing it home this time.
Kenton got me this for my birthday. Not the glass, the scotch inside of it. It's good. It's good scotch. I drank it a lot already on the other podcast. Unsolved.
So this one takes place in the town of Langenberg.
Okay, I'm from Saskatchewan, but I don't know where that is.
It's about an hour and a half north of Regina, but more towards the Manitoba border. I think in total it's about 2.5 hours to get
there. Does it still exist?
It still exists, yeah. I think it's pronounced Langenberg. I talked to someone from there, and that's how they pronounced it.
Weird. Okay, cool.
Because I could almost hear them cringe when I called it Langenberg. Our story begins then on August 1st, 1974.
Wow.
On a farm outside of Langenberg.
The 70s. Home of the Bee Gees.
You can eat.
Sorry.
This man, his name is Edwin. I'm not sure it's his last name.
Eddie Van Halen.
Edwin Fur. It's F-U-H-R. I don't know. It's Fur or Fur.
Let's go with the second one.
I'm going to call him Edwin. Just to be safe here.
Okay.
So Edwin is out swathing his crops.
Swathing
canola.
Wow.
Now, of course, because of when this takes place and the accounts and the reports, they use the old name for canola.
Rapeseed.
Rape. Yeah. We're not using it. So if you look this up, you're going to come across it a lot. It's canola. Okay. To clarify that. I'll get that out of the way right off the bat. So, Edwin is swathing canola, and he's going up a hill towards Slough, right? And as he's going up the hill, he sees in front of him a very strange thing. At first, he thinks, he calls it a duck blinder, which is what hunters use to kind of cover to hunt ducks and geese.
Yeah.
Americans use them a lot at that time. But it was silver, right? So it's not a normal duck hunter thing, but a duck blind. So he gets a little bit higher up. To the slough, and he sees, he thinks maybe it's some junk someone just dropped off at the farm by the water. And he's kind of annoyed, but what is this, right? So as he gets higher up, and I had to read a few different accounts to get the exact events, how they unfolded. And I'm so thankful someone interviewed him. So it was like straight from him what happened. Because, you know, newspaper accounts, they'll kind of deviate from the actual story, and then it's a game of telephone. So he actually said what happened. He said as he was getting up the hill, at first he saw one of these things, and then he realized, oh no, there's three of them in a line, and then there's two more a little further away, about 100 meters, I think it was, on either side. There's two more smaller ones.
Okay.
And what these were, he got off the swather and he walked over to them. He was in about 15 feet from them. They were metallic, round top, down, and then at the bottom, they had like a bit of a lip around it.
Okay.
Top was silver, the lip was kind of more gray, and he noticed they were silent, right? And there's the five of them. And he noticed that the grass below them was moving, kind of in like a clockwise pattern, like the wind was blowing it. But then he realized that these things, they weren't sitting on the ground, they were kind of hovering a foot off the ground.
Okay.
And that they were spinning counterclockwise, the other way that the grass was moving.
Okay.
So he approached them, and he kept saying in his interview, his instincts told him not to get any closer, right? Got within 15 feet of them, he's taking a look at them.
Just completely ignoring his instincts.
Well, he didn't want to get too close.
Right? Still getting closer.
Close. When he got off the swather, the machine, he left the engine running. But he was over here looking at these things, heard an engine cut off. So he's looking at them, trying to figure out what they are. He kind of gets in size of them. They're about 30 feet wide. And about 9.5 feet tall, right? Silently spinning. And then I think he just decides he's going to go back to the swather. He's just going to go. Because what are these things? I don't know. I'm going to carry on with my job. I have to get this get the canola off the field, right? This goes back to the machine, the swather, he goes turn on, it's dead. It will not move.
Mm.
So as he's sitting there, the engine won't move. He has these five things in front of him, silently hovering, and he says he kind of freezes. He's scared, right? And about 15 minutes pass, and then eventually they kind of stagger, go up, but like not like staggered over time, but like one and then the next, right? All five of them go up, just above him, up, but also over him, then whoosh, into the sky. And then he tries the engine again, and it works.
Hmm.
So this happened, I read one account said 9:30 in the morning, one account says 10:30 in the morning. Either way, this is when it happens. So he gets back to the farmhouse, right? And this isn't a part of the story that doesn't quite seem right to me. He gets back to the farmhouse, and his parents are there, right, helping with the harvest. And his mother says to him, "What took you so long? Dinner was at 12. And I don't know what time it was, but I'm thinking if this happened at 10:30,
yeah,
and let's say it lasted 20 minutes,
right,
it should only be about 11.
Right.
Right? But and I couldn't find no account about what time he got back to the farmhouse.
Weird. Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, maybe like the land he has is vast,
mm-hmm.
and it took him a while to drive back.
Yes, right. I think it said later it was about 300, I want to say feet, because they're using feet a lot because it was in the 70s, right? I think they haven't...
300 feet of land?
300 feet from the slough to the farmhouse. It's not that far, but I mean, maybe you're driving, you want to finish up your area and then head back, right? But it seemed like he went directly back to the house.
Yeah. Okay. So 300, like, that's not his, like, that's where he was from the house, is what you're saying. Not his, that's his farmland.
No.
Okay. Okay. No. Okay.
But anyway, I'm not sure what time he gets back.
Okay.
Right. But it seems to be he missed lunch. And then he tells them, you know, what he saw. He kind of describes he saw these metallic shapes out there, and now they're gone. And the dad says, he's reading the newspaper at the time, listening to this, and says, "Were they flying saucers?" And Edwin had never heard of that term before. He's like, "I don't know. I never heard that." And the guy says, the dad says, "I read about it in a German magazine a few months ago. About some flying saucers they found over Germany, saw over Germany. So let's go take a look." So they head out to where the slough was and where these objects were. In the ground, you can see the grass has been leveled down, but in the middle, it was still fine. So there were essentially these five circles where the outer rim had been pushed down and the middle was still standing up straight. So while Edwin was telling the story to his parents, his mother was on the phone with his sister, who was then relaying the story to the brother-in-law. And the brother-in-law was listening to the story afterwards and called the RCMP. So while Edwin is trying to get back to swathing the field, and the dad's taking a look at these grass crop circles, right? The RCMP show up, and they start investigating this. And the officer, 27-year-old officer, he's really concerned about this. What could this be, right? So he begins a big investigation into this, and he contacts Regina. And he has officers come up from Regina with dogs to try and see what this could be. And as they bring the dogs, this is a couple days have gone past.
Yeah.
As they bring the dogs to the farm, to the circles, the dogs don't want to go anywhere near these circles. They whine, they twist, they complain, right?
Yeah.
As dogs do. But they don't want to go anywhere.
Lazy ass dogs.
Yeah. They don't want to go anywhere close to these circles. And same with the cattle. They've had the cattle out since then. They don't go anywhere near these circles.
Hmm.
So someone says, well, maybe these circles are radioactive. And they call someone from Winnipeg and he comes up with a counter, Geiger counter. And yeah, they're quite radioactive.
Interesting.
And I was reading in a different account that said that the next few weeks afterwards, Edwin, he said he felt like his bones had been electrocuted.
That's not good.
And his muscles are really tight and stiff.
Dude, that's bad.
So I'm thinking there was some radioactivity there.
Yeah, he had radiation poisoning.
And that's what he was like, his instincts was telling him to stay away. You know, it's like energy telling him to stay away.
Yeah, his blood was vibrating.
Yeah, that's what it was. It wasn't his instincts.
He was... Oh my god.
So this I've read one source that says there was the five circles, and then a couple nights later, at one night, they can hear the dogs outside making a lot of noise, barking and howling, and you know, dog noises are, right?
Yeah.
And the next day they found a sixth circle out there. I don't know if that's true or not. Could just be a story, right? Edwin didn't say that in his interview. I've read that in a different source, so I take that with a grain of salt. But what he did say in his interview was when the RCMP were there and his father and looking at these different circles, one of the circles, so let's say the slough is here in front of me, and then you have the three, like do,
yeah. Right?
And you have the two here, okay, in the semicircle. This one here, behind it, they found like three indents into the grass, and they think it looked like, in their imagination, like a door had come down from one of these things onto the grass.
Oh, like,
yeah.
Okay.
And then they said they could see some, like, almost like footsteps kind of around the ship.
Yeah.
But, of course, Edwin didn't see anything when he was there, right? And that would not have been what he was looking. He was looking at the other side of it, not the side with the door.
Yeah.
But the side of the door was facing his farmhouse.
Mm.
That's how I knew it was 300 meters away.
Yeah.
Because it said how far it was from the farmhouse. And I think if there was somebody in that ship, or if it was a ship, right, they would be able to see the farmhouse and see everyone inside.
Right.
This story gets broken on the news, right? And it takes off. And people are coming in from all around the world to see these circles, these crop circles.
Sorry, and this is the
70s. Yeah, 70, the 70s, yeah. Yeah, four. I have a quote here from Edwin.
Ooh. Here's the quote. Holy shit.
He does have, okay, he has another one where he says, actually, what the devil was that contraption? Which is great. But
pretty good.
Yeah. But the quote was, it was a crazy fall. I gave probably more than 10,000 interviews. My head was booming. I couldn't sleep at night. I thought it would never stop. People were coming to our farm from all over the world with planes, buses, cars. I had visitors from Australia, China, Japan, US, even United States Air Force and Royal Canadian Air Force showed up. Remember, I went to the Regina Farm Show. I ended up giving interviews 3 days in a row. I got so sick and tired of all those microphones in your face. I don't want to make another one.
Yeah.
So the story goes that the neighbor's farm had, because they already kind of swathed it, right? A plane had touched down there full of tourists from Australia who wanted to come and see this.
Yeah.
He said that he had to light the grass on fire for the smoke so people wouldn't come any closer. He said people were coming in droves to see this. And that the United States Air Force and the Canadian Air Force were flying their jets over the farm, taking pictures of the whole area. And he was getting a lot of phone calls during this time too, from reporters, from people like us, you know, from UFO specialists.
It's probably a party line too. So it's like, you know, party line. Is
oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I it's bet. Like, it's not just his phone ringing, it's all of his neighbors too yeah. ringing. They're like, God damn it.
Edwin.
I know, Edwin. We don't even get the cool publicity, but our phone's ringing off the hook.
I didn't think about that. You're right. Yeah. They would be party lines back in the 70s. Yeah. Especially up in Legendburg. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hilarious. And you can just see the neighbors are on the phone too, listening in.
Yeah. It's just like,
he's on the phone again. He's being interviewed again. So he gets one call, and like he gets a lot of calls. He doesn't talk about who he called him, but this one call he talks about. He says he got a call from Neil Armstrong, who had walked on the moon 5 years earlier.
Yeah.
And they talked on the phone for 2 hours. And they said, how do you know it wasn't a hoax, right? Because, hey, come on, Neil Armstrong. Like, oh, yeah, sure, Neil Armstrong called me. He says, well, we talked for so long. He knew things that only Neil Armstrong would know about, and talked about his time as an astronaut and this and that, right? Things that only he would know.
Yeah.
And there's a story that says when Neil Armstrong was, when they're flying to the moon, they saw some ships out there. And there was no one out there at the time, right? Not like now, right?
Right.
And he radioed into Houston. It was like, hey, what's this thing out there? And they said, well, we don't know what that is. So they get to the moon. They land like in a crater. That's where they landed. And he said, and it's recorded, that they could see the ships on the edge of the crater watching them. And that these two segments on their time to the moon was scrapped from public record.
Hmm.
So when Edwin was talking to Neil, he said, you know, are these things real? Neil said, yeah, they're real. Like, confirming there's something out there, right?
Yeah.
So anyway,
fun.
Neil Armstrong called him, right? Super cool. They also got a visit from Dr. J. Allen Hynek from the Center of UFO Studies in Illinois. Now, Dr. Hynek was part of Operation Blue Book. In the United States, it was an operation where they wanted to record all these UFO sightings that was happening in the United States and document them and try and figure them out. Now, this Blue Book, Operation Blue Book, had already ended at this time. It ended, I think, in 69, so just a couple years prior. But the UFO Center of Studies was still in operation. So he sent someone down to investigate and came back inconclusive. Something had happened, but they don't know what. The RCMP finalized their investigation, and the officer said, whatever it was, it came from the sky and went back into the sky. They don't know what it was either. So I thought this story was awesome. And it's someone local. So I do as I do, and I called him.
Yeah.
And I called, I'm like, and the lady answers the phone, and I'm like, hi, is Edwin there? And she's like, no. And I'm like, oh, do you know when he'll be back? And she says, no. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll just cut to the chase here. I'm thinking she thinks I'm a telemarketer, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm calling about this 1974 alien encounter, UFO encounter. And she starts laughing at me. And she's like, oh, yes, okay. And I'm like, you know, like, when he'll be back, I can talk to him about it. And she says, he's in a care home now. He's like 86 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess so. I guess that was 50 years ago when this happened.
Yeah.
So anyway, I couldn't talk to Edwin. I tried. I think I talked to his daughter, but oh, cool. I didn't want to quiz them because I read an article that said that his kids don't want anything to do with the publicity.
Mm.
Right. So that's why instead I found the interview online and I did what I could from that.
Yeah.
Right?
At least you tried.
I tried, right? I made the call.
Dude, if you went to his care home and just like, I just want to ask you about the thing. No, no, no. I came here to get away from you.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I could pursue it further, but the guy's old. He's been harassed for 50 years about this. Leave him alone.
But what if he got it so hard at one point and then it just dropped off and then he missed it? And then 30 years later, some guy comes out of the blue and asks him about it. And he's like, oh,
true.
I missed this.
True. When people ask you about the Spanish flu, I'm the same way. Like, oh, yes, yeah. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, you're Kenton, though.
So I tried to talk to him. He wasn't around. He's probably won't be around again. Story was the ships came in 74, and the ship or the ships came a couple days later again. They leave the sixth circle, right? That's kind of, yeah, whatever. Okay. Right? But then I was watching a video, and this guy who's heavily investigated this said that UFOs returned to Langenberg again in 89.
Hmm.
And this time it was over a school. There's two ships hovering over a school in the daylight, and the teachers and students were witnesses. So if you know anybody who lived in Langenberg in 1989 and was going to school at that time,
please let us know.
Let us know, because you would not believe how hard it is to find information about Langenberg online. They have a website and like a couple paragraphs and nothing about it. Like, it's hard to find. If you know anybody, please have to reach out to us. I'll tell you a story. One of the I was watching a YouTube video about this, and one of the comments said in it, oh, this sounds just like the thing that happened in Vibank in 1984. And I'm like, what? Right? Or 1984, something like that. So I called the library in Vibank.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, do you know anything about this? And she was like, I'm not really from Vibrank Bank, so I don't know anything. I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. So I called, very helpful lady. She couldn't help me, though.
Yeah.
I called the town hall, left them a message. And then I called where I think the site, the thing crashed, called them too, a farmhouse. I left them a message, right?
So you called three of the 30 buildings that are there.
Yeah, in Vibrank, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't think he was going to get back to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that night, I'm sitting at home, and my phone goes off. It's ringing, and I don't answer it. I think I didn't get there on time, right? And then I'm like, oh, someone called me. I'm going to call them back, right? I call them back. They didn't answer, right? So I hang up the phone, and then boom, my voicemail comes in. Like, oh, of course, leave me a voicemail when it's calling them back, right? So I listen to the voicemail, and they say who they are, and then there's like a 15-second gap where I called them.
Yeah.
And they said who they were from and what they're calling about.
Yeah.
And then it cuts back in and they're talking about these UFOs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is this from Vibank? Is this from the Edmonds family? I don't know who it is.
Okay.
So I have to look into this more.
Yeah.
I think this is about the Vibank incident. So we might have to come back to it later.
That's so funny.
But okay. It was like, I should investigate one UFO encounter at a time, or I'm gonna get them.
You're gonna, well, and you're gonna overstimulate yourself, Kenton.
Yeah, I do that. I do that. Okay, so we'll talk about the theories now. What this was. Number one theory, obviously, alien UFO. Okay, get that one out of the way.
Aliens.
Hey, get that one out of the way first. Okay, lots of reason why you think it's aliens. We got the crafts, we got the advanced technology, we got the radioactivity, we got Neil Armstrong, we got the U.S. Air Force, the Canadian Air Force, got the crop circles. That's a no-brainer. Okay, if you're doing the alien idea, this is an alien story. Okay.
Okay.
Theory one. Theory two. It's a little more obscure. Okay, and I don't believe it. But I'll tell it and let people decide what they think. A researcher from the States was looking into this case and said that it's possible that these circles in the grass they're called fairy circles, not by fairies. It's by like mushrooms growing under the soil. They grow up in, like, as opposed to individual spots of mushrooms, it's like a ring of mushrooms.
Okay.
And that these would cause the crops or the plant, the grass, to bend over.
Bend over because it's probably taking their nutrients and stuff.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But only in that area.
Right.
And when they looked into what this was, they were kind of digging around. They did find mushrooms. But it's also on a slew in September. You might find mushrooms. That's not out of the question. And I don't know how many mushrooms they found. But the idea was that some mushrooms emit a light, that they glow. Somewhat bioluminescent.
Yeah.
And the idea was it was an overcast day. Maybe there was some steam coming off the water and these mushrooms were glowing and that's what they saw.
Okay.
It sounds like the most, like, no. Like, that doesn't answer anything, right?
Yeah, and then the Geiger counter, you know.
No.
was malfunctioning.
And no, yeah. Doesn't do anything, right?
Yeah.
So no, I'm not going with the mushroom theory, but you know, that was one theory that came up, that maybe there was mushrooms causing the problem. And of course, they had lots of people ask Edwin over the years, were you on something? Were you want attention, right? Well, could have been anything. So the third theory was the Avro Canada VZ9 Avro car.
Okay.
I've heard of the Avro before, the airplane, the Avro Aero, but never this thing. So what this thing was, experimental aircraft made by the government of Canada, had a dome on the top, a lip, kind of like what Edwin described. It was propulsioned with things at the bottom. Like he described there being like four vents underneath the ship.
Yeah.
It said four vents below it. And it was a vertical propulsion thing. So its whole thing was going up, right?
Okay.
Kind of like a helicopter, because like, planes need that takeoff to go up. Helicopters can go straight up.
Yeah.
This is like that, but it was like the engine was inside as opposed to the blades on the outside.
Okay.
Experimental aircraft that I've never heard of before. But the pictures online look very similar to what he described.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, I would say it's probably it.
Does it run on nuclear power?
Well, the thing is,
that would explain that then.
Right? Yeah. The thing is, it was discontinued at the end of the 50s.
Interesting.
I know from, I don't know anything about this aircraft, and the Wikipedia article is long about this, right?
Yeah.
But I know the Avro Aero airplane, same idea, same concept, right?
Yeah.
What happened was the United States did like a brain drain of technology innovators from Canada.
Yeah.
Anyone involved in this project were headhunted and said, hey, come work for us in the States.
Yeah.
And that was why the Avro Aero program was canceled.
Okay.
They lost everyone involved. I'm thinking this Avro car, probably the same program.
Yeah.
Same thing happened.
Interesting.
That everyone who worked on it went to the States. And there's a good chance that technology carried on down there. But of course, there was ideas that they could use this Avro Aero type technology in war. Have a ship with a tank on top and fly it in.
Yeah.
Right? That kind of thing. Could this have been a souped up version of the Avro Aero car? Maybe. Running on nuclear energy? Maybe. It could also be because it was just a military aircraft and they're around nuclear stuff all the time. Like, it doesn't have to be crazy amounts of radiation.
I guess we don't know the exacts of all this stuff. Like, maybe something running can make something radioactive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was definitely some radiation there, both because of his ailments, Edwin's ailments. Afterwards, and because the Geiger counter readings.
Saskatchewan's very radiated.
Yes.
So that's also a thing to keep in mind. Like there's a lot of radiation in this.
A lot of potassium.
Yeah.
It could have been he was using potassium for fertilizer.
Mm.
And that it was like not that far away.
Right.
But if a runoff area into the slough, the ground could have been highly radioactive already. So I don't know, right? And I wish the reports had said exact radiation levels. I kind of understand that because I have a Geiger counter and I have been to some places that are radioactive, so I would know.
You have a bowl.
I have my sugar bowl, yeah.
That's radioactive.
Yeah. So it would be cool to know the exact levels, but I didn't know them.
Hmm.
So you're right. That's an excellent point about the ground. It could have just been radioactive.
Yeah.
It could have been fertilizer. Could have been anything. Yeah. And his illness, stressful situation. He said in his interview, he was gripping the wheel of the swather, like it was like white knuckled it, right? He could have just pulled his muscles, caused strain, yeah. Right? Stress, strain, that kind of thing. Nerves, yeah. That's why he was sore afterwards. Radiation, I was actually really going for that, but you talking out of it. So maybe, maybe not. I do think it was a military aircraft.
I agree.
I have one more little thing for this, though.
We'll see.
Langenberg is only 4.5 hour drive away from Falcon Lake.
Full of bears. Wait, what?
Falcon Lake.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Yeah, I know.
Where the other UFO encounter happened. I was reading a thing. It's like, it's just a short drive. I'm like, listen, I'm from Saskatchewan. Short drive ends after 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Sure, if you could fly, it's not that far, right? But the ships sound a lot like the one that happened in Falcon Lake. Only he got blasted with the engine.
Right.
When these things took off, they bellowed some steam down onto him.
Yeah.
But he said it wasn't hot. Said it wasn't cold. Didn't smell like anything. It was kind of like, I think it was water vapor. That's what it seemed like to me. And that could have been just radioactive water vapor too. Yeah.
Interesting.
So
pieces are fitting together.
Some people put the two of them kind of, because that happened only about 5 or 6 years before. I think it happened in 69. This happened in 74.
Okay.
And the distance isn't that far away from each other.
Right.
So some people say they're the same. I think it's different. But I do think, just because of the reaction by both of the militaries and both the stories, where the military flew in and took a look at it, I think it's a military aircraft or something of that kind, and they wanted to cover up any tracks.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously. That makes the most sense.
But sure, it could be aliens, right?
Could be.
And, you know, the following encounter in 89 that we know nothing about could...
Every day, more and more aliens seems less crazy, too.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
So it's totally out there.
But I like alien stories, but I'm going to put this one with the military. I think it's a military craft of some kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, no, I don't have a crazy thing to say. That makes the most sense to me. Just so happened to be, like, I don't know for sure, but I could probably go to a few crops. You could probably randomly pick a crop and throw your Geiger counter on and actually get some solid readings.
Yes.
So I'm just like, you know?
Yeah.
And the guy who came to check, that's from Winnipeg. People from Winnipeg are fucking idiots. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Winnipeg's great.
Nice city. I was going into this with aliens on mine, but you've talked me into thinking it's government, military aircraft. And I wish I could talk to Edwin and ask him about this.
See what he thought.
Yeah, about this theory, because I'm sure everyone who's talked to him about it thinks it's aliens, right? All the guys from all the woodworks think, oh, it's got to be aliens, right? Mm-hmm. But there were some parts of the story I didn't understand reading about it. One part says that they had found some kind of black material, on the crops or on the grass.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, could that have been oil? Could that have been, you know, the mushrooms melting under the heat? Could it have been anything?
Alien blood?
It could have been, right? But his interview didn't talk about that. I only saw one line about it in a newspaper article near the bottom. And they said they couldn't figure out what it was. I'm like, well, what was it? Right? Like, so I would like to have asked him more questions, but there's a lot of pieces of the story that I don't understand. And I think I'll be able to ever know. I will go with what information I have. I want to say military aircraft. And if that was anything, maybe it was oil. Maybe it was liquid of some kind. Maybe it was like, because I don't know how this craft runs, right? Mm-hmm. But let's say it's using water. And that's why it's by the slough. It's drinking up the water or whatever. That's what it was doing. Maybe it was flushing out its vents. And that was guck from that. Like, who knows?
Especially if it is, like, if it's radioactive, it probably needs water to cool down the radioactive thing.
Yeah, to refuel and cool down the nuclear engine.
Or whatever. Reactor.
Reactor core, yeah.
Look at us.
So, you know? We know what we're talking about. Well, thank you for tonight, Dylan.
That was great.
I thought you might enjoy this one.
I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's just, that's why it's good to spread them out, like different places and stuff like that. But when it's like very close to home, it just hits different.
Yeah.
You know, like this one and the Martinsville horror.
Yeah.
Like just stuff like that where it's real close. It hits different.
Yeah.
And obviously, Keepness.
Yes.
That one. But that one hits, that's a different level.
Yeah, it's one thing where it's like a missing kid.
Yeah, versus, especially recent missing kid.
Yes, versus a UFO from 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Different levels.
That's even beyond. That's even beyond, but yeah.
I didn't reach out to Edwin's daughter, I think it was, on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because she saw me talking about Vibank. She's like, oh, I know about the one in Langenberg. I'm like, I know that last name. But she can get back to me. So maybe we'll have to retouch this in the future.
If she does get back to you.
Yeah, if she does.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for the story. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for speaking.
And thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of Unsolved Canadian Mysteries. Hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, my name is Kenton DeYoung, and I'm sitting here with my co-host, Dylan Furman. And this is Unsolved Canadian Mysteries.